Welcome to Consider This Program. I'm your host, Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
And we're happy to have you all along and on the show today. It is hard for me to say this, but I hope you had a great 4th of July, Ken. Angie, July.
I know,
July,
I can't believe it.
July 2019. Crazy, right? Yep. What's your earliest childhood memory that you really, that you can really think of?
That's... I got a funny joke about that, but I can't tell it. Probably one of my third or fourth birthdays, probably.
Okay. I remember being on grandma's couch when I was three waiting for dad to come home, but just barely. I can remember some of the decorations.
Uh-huh.
But just barely. What about you, Ange?
Well, as far as 4th of July goes, I really remember the midnight parade in Anderson.
Yeah, oh, that used to be a big deal.
Yeah.
For those of you out of state, we live in about a half an hour north of Indianapolis, and believe it or not, they have a midnight parade. Still goes on every the night going into 4th of July. And my wife said, "We're going to the parade." And I go, "Honey, it's dark." You know, so it's just one of those Anderson, Indiana things. But my first 4th of July that I remember well, or I shouldn't say the first one, but was at going to Bowl in 1976, celebrating the bicentennial with my cousins. And, you know, it was... it's just amazing when you think 1976 and now we're talking about 2019.
Yeah. In my classroom, we built the Mayflower. We literally built that as our class.
Angie and I are in different schools, but at the same time.
Yes.
And so we've had all these wonderful experiences in our youth. Anyhow, speaking of experiences, we've got a show laid out for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about stock buybacks. You know, I'm not a big fan of talking about economic stuff on the show. If you want economic stuff, you can go to our website, yourlifeafterwork.com, and request the Market Carver. I send out a video every single week. It's free. And that's where either myself or Adam Harder, our chief investment strategist, lays out what we think was the most important thing that happened in the economy the week before. I got to ask a question about life in your 30s and what we should consider. Somebody had a came in and said, "Joe, I've been hearing your show. You've not talked about charitable gifting for a while. It is time for us to get back on that." So Angie found an article. We will run through it. And then we are going to talk about the retirement budget. A couple weeks ago, we talked about how to figure out how much money you need for retirement. I got questions for more clarification. So I'm going to focus on that one a little bit more. If you have a question or something that you would like to get to Angie, email us, consider this at yourlifeafterwork.com, or give us a call, 800-928-4001. We'll take a break and be right back. yourlifeafterwork.com.
Hi, Joni Michaels here. We know you care about your money, but are you tired of worrying about it? The Financial Enhancement Group takes care of people just like you who don't want to worry about their money. As fiduciaries, the team at the Financial Enhancement Group will care for your nest egg just like they would care for their own if they were in your situation. There are many decisions you'll need to make as you face retirement, and the team at the Financial Enhancement Group is here to help you. Call 800-928-4001 or go to yourlifeafterwork.com to set up a time to meet. The confusion and complexity of retirement is almost as daunting as is the excitement of retirement. Don't let your fear and frustration of taxes and investing derail your retirement. Call the Financial Enhancement Group at 800-928-4001. They'll give you a complimentary second opinion on your strategy for retirement. Begin your adventure in your life after work. Call 800-928-4001 or yourlifeafterwork.com. Now back to Consider This Program with Joe Clark.
Welcome to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
I can think back to having my bacon saved in the investment world. The first time, Ken, I got fortunate and didn't understand it was my bias. And the second one, somebody else had to help me understand my bias. So in behavioral finance, we talk about cognitive biases all the time. And where I'm going with this is every time I turn around, this political separation that we have in the world right now is so great that there are people who I believe want the economy to do poorly just so they can say that the president did a bad job, right? And, you know, I don't care, like him or dislike him, that's your job. But when you're looking at this economy, you've really got to understand what's going on. So as I tell you this story, let me give you one basic fact. Please never confuse an economy and a stock market. Okay, they are two entirely separate things. I used to spend a lot of my time on CNBC, and the reporters would go, Ken, you know, what'd you think about the jobs number? And then the next question is, you know, and how's the market going to respond? And these are two different things, right? This is like talking about, you know, your nutrition versus your workout. Two different things, you know, that both can matter, but they're two separate things. So in 2003, in case you forget this, we had just lived through the tech wreck in 2000. 2002 was the ugliest year technically that I have seen in the market in my entire career. Everything got beat up. Yes, it was worse than 2008 in a lot of regards technically. But this, we're talking about the market, not the economy in this case. And in 2003, George Bush Jr., W, changed the taxation on dividends in March of 2003. And so all of a sudden, dividend stocks were a preferential item. They were treated like, they were taxed like a long-term capital gain. And so the market started to soar, right? Well, along comes 2007, and a president on the other side gets in, you know, gets in place. And there's many people who disliked Obama as disliked Bush. They were just opposites, right? And I happened to have a friend that, you know, was on the Democrat side of the world. And he looked at me and he said, Joe, here's what's going to happen. He said, a lot of people are going to miss this over biases. I've got friends in New York who are rich who missed 4 years of the market because they couldn't believe that George Bush could get a stock market to go back up in 2003. And so they stayed in cash and they missed all of 4, all of 5, all of 6, all of 7, right? And he said, I'll tell you what's going to happen. There are going to be people that are going to be on the other side of this that get out over a political bias, right? And they're going to be sitting in cash. And, you know, that story just resonated with me, and I recognized the blessing that I had in 03. And I do my best to keep my political biases out of where we are inside of the marketplace, right? So I try to see it for what it is. You know, I have huge challenges with immigration, you know, because I don't know what to do with bad people.
Of course.
I also know we have 1.4 million more jobs than what we have workers, than we have people to work, right? And we're at the lowest unemployment rate. You got to have people to work. So I wouldn't know what to tell the president if he called, frankly. I have no idea. Here's what I do know. I'm hearing a lot of people tell us that this stock market is overblown. And I will tell you that I've got some fears about the stock market. If we have time, we'll get to that. But that the stock market is overblown, and all of the money that these corporations got from the tax cut went to share buybacks, went to stock buybacks. And I've heard it in multiple places. So let's start with the basics. Angie, do you want to explain what a stock buyback is?
I do not.
Oh, Ken, do you want to explain what a stock buyback is?
I can give you a general idea.
General, probably good enough.
Okay, that's good. I would assume it's when the company goes out into the open market and buys back their shares, so their outstanding shares of stock is reduced to help their price per share.
I wouldn't even say that was basic. That was pretty much exact, right?
That's excellent. It's
exactly what it is. So a company makes profit, and they've got a choice. They can pay a dividend. And the way that works, when you hear double taxation, if I pay a dividend, it means the company has to pay taxes on it at the corporate level, right? Which is why it was such a big deal that the corporate tax rate was dropped in 2018. So I can pay the dividend. I can reinvest in the company, buy more buildings, hire more people, do that kind of stuff. Or I can buy back some of my outstanding shares, which is exactly what Ken said. Well, the people who didn't like the president were very, very clear that the tax cuts that corporate America got only went to these share buybacks, that people weren't really investing in businesses, they weren't doing all of that. And, you know, I look hard to find bad economic data. I mean, I really look hard, but it's kind of like we talked about a couple weeks ago, Angie, that book that I've got, Lies, Darned Lies and Statistics, except the word's not darn, right? You can do a lot with math. When something gets bigger and bigger and bigger, you can get very much out of proportion, right? So you can look at numbers and get some very bad data, right? So there's people that we work with a lot on the Market Carver. If you get signed up for that, you can go to our website at yourlifeafterwork.com. We send out a video newsletter every Thursday that says, here's what we think are the most important things that came out of the economy. And it's called the Earnings Scout Report. Nick Reich does a great job. So this was dated May 22nd, 2019. And he said, in a recent S&P 500 Dow Jones study, 86% of S&P 500 companies recorded in Q1 of 2019 that they had repurchased $188 billion worth of stock. Now, if you don't know what you're doing, that's a heck of a headline, isn't it, Angie?
Yeah.
$188 billion. I can see if you wanted to hate somebody, why you could use that and say, this is clearly not working, right? But you got to know more. This $188 billion of share buybacks puts the quarter on pace for the second highest amount on record, going all the way back to 1988. A staggering figure, right?
Yeah. Yes.
They can't hear your head nod on the radio.
And
she got, yeah,
no,
you actually, you have to move your lips. Yes, she talks with her hands. She talks.
I'm a very animated speaker.
You are. So here's the data, though. The collective market cap of the S&P 500 right now is roughly $25.2 trillion.
Wow.
And yes, Ken, that's with a T. Trillion, right? Like bunches of zeros. So if you take $188 billion and you divide it by $25.2 trillion, that is a whopping 0.74%, right? The market's moving up and down more than 1% a day. The buybacks are absolutely immaterial, but people who want to take the data and cast it as, oh, this isn't working, and try to come up with these negative stories really need to dig into the facts. And you also have to keep in mind that Apple's probably going to buy $175 billion of their own stock back this year, right?
Wow.
So are there stock buybacks going on? Yes. Did the tax cuts that came in corporate America help to fuel them? Absolutely. But to say that all of the money is just going into stock buybacks and not back into investing is a different story. Now, I will tell you, it does appear in some places in inventories, inside of some of the places that we look at economically, that you're seeing capital investment go down. Part of that's over the concern of the trade wars. Part of that's in various concerns in other places. But a big challenge right now is we got to find workers. You know, mm-hmm. if I had to hire 10 more people tomorrow, Angie, where would we find them?
I don't know.
I mean, we work and pray hard every time we have to find people, you know, because we can't just put anybody in here. So, you know, we want good quality people, and to go find them, people that you would trust with your family's money, you know, can be difficult. And I'm very, very happy with the team that we have, but it is a challenge. So end of rant. Just want to tell you the economy, I think, is a little better than people think. Is it a 3% economy? Probably not. Is it a 2.5%? My guess is at the end of the year, that's probably what you're going to see, right? Somewhere between 2 and 2.5. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dugger, Angie Kinzer. You got a question or comment, shoot us an email, considerthis@yourlifeafterwork.com. We will take a break and be right back with more. Hi, I'm Joe Clark, your host for Consider This program.
And I'm Ken Dugger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
And the three of us are going to have a wonderful conversation, most of it coming from your questions. And if you've got one that you would like to add to the show, consider this program, or consider this rather, at yourlifeafterwork.com is our email. Our website is yourlifeafterwork.com, or you can go right to Angie, give her a call at 800-928-4001. All right, Angie, when I say the word retirement budget, what does that mean to you?
I guess what your expenses would be after you were retired or on a fixed income.
Okay, fair enough. The when people who know me know that we are very budget driven at the Financial Enhancement Group. So in business, I'm very budgeted. In the Clark household, not so much budgeted. You know, I don't know why. I guess I just get enough of it at work. I don't want to have to go home and do it at the house too.
Yeah, I hear
but
you.
We go through extensive work on putting together a budget for our team every year in terms of what we do. When you go to retire, however, in our opinion, you do need a retirement budget. And there's a couple reasons for that. One, Angie and I talked a couple weeks ago about one of the biggest fears. What do you suppose the biggest fear is of a normal retiree, Ken?
If they have enough money to live the way they want to before they retire.
Not running out of money would be number one. Number two, guess what?
Living long enough to enjoy?
Oh, you know, people don't say that, but I guess that could be kind of.
Well, because it also had slash health issues.
Health, right. Yeah. So that's fair. So the big one for me, and the one that I've seen affect the most people here, is dementia, right?
Definitely.
It's that ability to fade away. So when you talk about the retirement budget, though, and what you're trying to get, we want to divide it into two areas. And I will tell you, retirement planning can feel like exploratory surgery. you're worried something's wrong, but you're not sure what it is, and you really don't want them to find anything. But that question of will I have enough, and how do I know I won't run out is a big deal. So as a CFP, here's what we're trained to do, Ken. I look at you and your life expectancy based on tables that have not a whole lot to do with Ken, right, but have a lot to do with Ken's age. Then I ask you how much income you think you're going to need to have at retirement, ask you what you've already saved, and what you expect your rate of return while you're still saving, right?
Mm-hmm.
That may sound a little like it's duplicating, but now we have to talk about the rate of return when you're going to distribute, when you take it out, because the rate of return during distribution will be lower than the rate during preservation. Remember, distribution has two main challenges. One is the tax rate of the average dollar you pull out, and the second is the volatility between distribution points. And then last but not least is inflation. So, Ken, if you told me you needed $10,000 a month to retire today, we would have to say, okay, $10,000 is fine, but, you know, you're not even 50 yet. And now when we talk about retirement and going out into the future, we've got to add that purchasing power to make sure that it doesn't erode. And then we would come back with a number that was so large, Angie would tell me that she could never retire and just give up hope and, you know, I don't know what Angie would do because I've never told Angie that. But that is the problem. So when you have a retirement budget, when you really sit down to look at it, there are two different types of money that we have. I call them fixed and social. Michael Kitsis, who's a big fan of, he tends to say that there's fixed core expenses and there's fixed that are somewhat discretionary, right? You can say, you know, we're taught as CFPs, he's also one, we're taught that food is a core need, right? Mm-hmm. You always have to eat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But there is a difference between Morton's and Eddie Merlot's and, you know, McDonald's or MCL or staying at home to cook, right? I mean, that cooking budget can be different. So if you really wanted to get into this in a big breakdown way, you break down essential fixed and you know, fixed that you can kind of fudge, right? And then on the other side, you've got social. And there's the low end of social, and then there's the high end of social. You know, you don't have to go to Europe. You can go to Gatlinburg, right?
Yes.
And figure out what it is to give yourself a bigger adjustment if you want to. What I know is if you don't have a retirement budget and you get to be 65, and I tell you, Ken, that you can pull out the $10,000 a month, what I see is a lot of people fearful that they're not going to have enough money when they're taking out the $10,000. And what Angie's watched over the last 7 or 8 years of being here, and what I've seen in the 31 years of my career, is that most people, when you look at discretionary spending, that discretionary spending begins to decline at 65. It really declines at 68 in our practice. But up when you look at 75, it just falls off the charts. So almost all of your spending is over on that fixed side. And I will tell you, it's either healthcare for you or not healthcare for you. It's the big budget item that's inside of there. So I think you need that retirement budget. Go ahead, Ange.
I of all the articles I've been reading, I kind of want to get your opinion on this. I keep reading a lot about retirement scenario playing, like where you come up with different things that are surprises, the loss of a spouse, mm-hmm. or a loss of a job, and trying to go through every scenario possible before you retire to see what maybe.
The word that you probably saw, which I think they just used to impress people, is stochastic modeling or Monte Carlo simulation.
Oh, is that what that is?
And that's what that is. And what they do is they take out this they designed it. Purdue actually is given credit for creating it. It's how we put a man on the moon, was using stochastic modeling. But what they do in an investment world is they'll go through and give you about 980 different simulations. So they'll look at your portfolio that you've put together based on how much is in equity and how much is in bonds, and a bunch of other variables. And then one day, maybe July 7th of 2006, and the next day, you know, March 1st of 1954, and they'll just keep throwing as many as 77,000 scenarios at it to say, here is your probability of success with the portfolio that you've created. Now, I have issues with that because here's the bottom line. I wasn't alive in 1954. I care about the economy that we're in today and where we're headed. So I'm not a huge fan of that. We have the technology in our office. A couple of our planners use it because people want it. It's just not my favorite thing in life. The Monte Carlo simulation that they're talking about in this case is, okay, what would happen if one of you died, right? Because I got news for you. One of us is going to die, right? And then the other one's going to die. It's part of the deal. What would happen if the tax rate went up? What would happen if you lost Social Security? What would happen with these scenarios? They make a little bit more sense to me, and they call them stress tests. And we kind of do them to a degree. So you know when I work with a family, you know, if Ken and his wife came in and we sit down and talked, and he said, this is it, Joe, I'm done, can't take it anymore, right? I would say, okay, Ken, here's our retirement budget. So first we try to start with a retirement practice year. You've got your retirement budget. We take away all your other money and we give you that every month. And at the end of the year, if you have money left, you know it worked, right? If you didn't have any money left, then we knew it didn't work and we have to revisit this, right?
Pretty simple, right?
They're pretty simple, right? And then we go into that process of taking the money out. And what we do is agree for 3 years, we're not going to make any changes, right? Because I got to live through 98, 99, and 2000, where people came in January of 2000 and wanted twice the amount of money monthly because their account was twice the size as it was in 97. I told them then it was a bad idea. I think you all probably know it was a bad idea. And I've seen people cut their income in 08, which obviously didn't need to happen as long as it was properly managed. But you've got to be able to control those emotions. And that's really where the retirement budget comes into play. I've got too many 90-year-olds, quite frankly, with a lot of money left and not a lot of life. So I want people to be able to spend money and enjoy it. I will tell you the one thing that I see people miss a lot is what's called carry cost. That's the cost of taking care of a home even after it's already paid for. We'll take a break and be right back. Hi, I'm Joe Clark, your host of Consider This Program.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
Happy to have you all along. Angie, I got to ask a question. I don't listen to song or music very often anymore. I'll admit to that. It's just part of the deal. I'm a podcast junkie. It's just too easy for me to get to stuff that I like and learn and listen. And there's just incredible wisdom that's being shared. And podcasts are free. You can download Consider This Program. This is a podcast. And we had a lot of nice things that came back from our podcast with Michael Hackard from last week. Remember, you got 9 minutes on the show with him. We've got a 40-minute podcast that you can download if you want to hear more about widows, stepchildren, and elder care abuse, or crimes, I guess it was estate crimes is what he called it. Yeah. So I got to ask a question, and there's a song on this on K-Love that talks about, you know, what would you tell yourself if you could go back in time? And so somebody said, Joe, I'm 52, said, Joe, what would you tell yourself if you were turning 30 all over again? And obviously you're thinking about, K-Love was not talking about financially. The question that I got asked was financially, but I went back and thought about it. And so, what would you tell yourself, Ken, at 30?
Oh, my gosh. Probably just play a couple more years of football. Grin and bear it, grin through it.
Grin and bear it a couple more years. Ken played in the NFL if you're not a Colts fan and Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan. So he got to win a Super Bowl, got to do all of that cool stuff. Angie, what would you tell you?
I would probably tell myself not to stress out over the things I can't control because all that's done is make my hairstylist rich with my gray hair.
There are things that happened a little bit quicker. I wrote down a few things. The first one is that I would tell people and remind them that things change, right? Not to get stuck in your ways. This is what I would tell me. You know, Benjamin Franklin, one of my favorite people in history, said that most men die at 25. They just waited for their bodies to catch up. And what he meant was if it wasn't your occupation or your hobby, you didn't care to learn about any of the new things coming along. And I see that happen a lot in the financial world. So things change would be number one rule. And I will tell you, things that feel good in the moment are sometimes produce the most painful results long term. So try to stay away from shiny objects. There are a couple things that I have bought along the way that I'm glad I bought. And there's a couple things I bought along the way that, what in the world was I thinking?
Oh, I know, right? I've been waiting for you to have a rummage sale.
Talk to Vicky about that. Number two, it's margin. Number three, I guess, would be margin. Margin in time, money, and energy. If I could have gone back, because, I teach people to obviously to save and accumulate money, you know, live on less than you have to live on financially. That's one of the things that I teach people now, right? So that your standard of living is less that you have to replace at retirement. You've all heard that on the show. I wish I would have learned to keep my calendar and my energy level at 75%, right? So that there was 25% for things that popped up, so that I didn't have to try to sneak them in an 80 and 90 hour work weeks, that I had that space in there and had it built in from the beginning. I would do that. On debt, I think any time you take on a debt, we do this today, we have structure and strategy. You know, what's the length of the term? What's the interest rate? You know, and I think in my 30s, Ken, the question was, can I get the loan?
Right.
Right? You know, today it's no. How do we go about this in a different way? And obviously, I'm financially in a different situation, but it's still, there's things that I would like to tell myself. For instance, 30-year-olds, if you don't understand how debt to income ratio works, when you go to buy a car, which I guess they're now 7-year payment plans, I can't even imagine, but when you go to buy a car, whatever that monthly debt payment is it comes off the amount of money that you can use to buy a house. Now, oddly enough, when you buy a house, you have an asset that hopefully doesn't depreciate.
So true. And
when you buy a car, you know that they're all going to depreciate. However, bankers will loan you money for cars much quicker than Ken will loan you money for a house.
True.
We can go through the whole economic reason of explaining why, but again, for those of you not in Anderson, Indiana, General Motors used to be a big part of this. My father-in-law was an electrical engineer at General Motors. And, you know, shortly after Barb and I got engaged 31 years ago, I found out I had this thing called the A-Buyer. That meant we could buy a truck, a red 1988 sports side, bucket seats. Oh, man, I loved that truck. But I hated that payment. And when I went to try to get the house loan, I swear it was an act of Congress. Not only was I self-employed, right, because I was in this business, but secondly, I had this big honking truck payment because all I cared about is could I get the loan?
Of course.
Right? So rule number one, make sure you buy your house before you buy some stupid shiny truck. Rule number two, when you get pregnant, your wife's going to make you get rid of said shiny truck anyhow, right? And so don't go through the pain. But that's one of the things, structure the debt, emergency funds. I think what you have to learn in life is things are not probable today, but are very much probable in the future. You're likely to get married, buy a house, have kids, try to pay for some of their college. You're likely to retire. There's going to be oops along the way. You may have to take care of your parents, believe it or not. You're probably going to want to travel, and you may want to get a second home. That means you have to build tax diversification in your savings. So go ahead and save money, but make sure that you've split it into different tax buckets. I see you writing down a question, Angie. Go ahead.
This is a question I had from last week, and we didn't get to it, and that is someone had asked if they could use their Roth as an emergency fund.
You can. A Roth IRA, yes. A Roth 401k, no. So if you've got a Roth 401k and your 401k plan allows, because not all of them do, allows you to borrow money out of the plan in theory. In a Roth IRA, you can always get your contribution money back. There's no 10% penalty. You don't have to wait till 59 and a half. I wouldn't put it in there if you knew you were going to use it. So there's a difference, Ken, between a put and take account, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you know you're putting money in because you're going to go to Italy,
right?
And you know you're going to take it back out. Or there's people who put in an extra $500, you know, like our business line of credit. It's always up and down, right? It's zero, then it's up, and then, you know, it's just the way lines of credit were designed to work. That's a put and take account, right? So I wouldn't use my Roth for that.
Well, right? No, an emergency fund.
But an emergency fund, if you've got money that you've had sitting in a bank for 10 years, that's in a taxable account, you know, things change. You probably don't need the emergency fund money quite as much as you did before, because hopefully you have more margin in your life. You could easily change that into a Roth IRA, and yet know you could get it if you needed to get it back. So we've put together a checklist for life in your 30s. If you want to email Angie, consider this at yourlifeafterwork.com and just say, hey, what's the checklist for life in your 30s? We can get that to you. It is I think it's important when you look at life to have a strategy. And I don't know that I would want somebody to go back in my life and tell me everything that I know now. You know, you can always dream if you'd have known about the tech wreck on March 10th and of 2000 or, you know, what was coming up in 2008. You know, you can go back and think about those economically, but there's also surprises in life. Like, you know, I had no idea when my daughters were going to pop out, right? And I certainly wouldn't want to put them back now, you know, but it was kind of like, hey, this was not part of the plan yet.
Right.
You know, how did this get here, right? And, but there's things like that. But life should be an adventure, and it should be fun, and it should be exciting. But just understand and please remember, regardless of what age you are, things change. The things that I did for you financially 20 years ago are not the same things that we do today. We've learned more, our process is better, our technology is better, but even more than that, the opportunities for places to invest have just dramatically improved. You're listening to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger and Angie Kinzer. Go to yourlifeafterwork.com or give us a call, 800-928-4001. Welcome back to Consider This Program. I'm your host, Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
And we are happy to have you all along. So this is where we go through and we talk about what we discussed and what we learned. It's a last conversation for the show. So we broke it into four bits. So Kinzer, tell me which one you want to tell us about. Kinzer would be Angie, I'm sorry. We have 28 people on the team at the Financial Enhancement Group. And statistically, though Adam tells me I can never say this because I have no facts to back it up, I'm just telling you of my 52-year-old observation. Out of 28 people, what is the likelihood of an Angie, an April, an Adam, an Andrew, an Aaron, an Ashley, an Alicia, and Angela? I believe it's 8 out of 28. I'm just saying that doesn't sound,
wow.
You know, that doesn't, and I'm not sure I'm not missing somebody. But anyhow, it's amazing. So when I use people's last name, it's not out of being mean or anything else. It's out of identification in the office. Kinzer, get in here.
Okay, so on the Better Giver that we just talked about, yep. And we talked about the appreciated stock, I think that one of the things that really, how I learned about it as a paraplanner when I would listen to you tell families is that this is money we would have been donating anyway. And if we liquidate that appreciated stock, we're going to pay the capital gains on it right then. But if you transfer it to a charitable business, they don't have the tax, we don't have the tax, and then we could have used the money we were going to give anyway to buy more stock. So I think that I was just surprised that it's a win-win, I guess, for both.
Were you surprised that it's a win-win, or were you surprised that people that have as much money as they have had no clue that it was even an option?
Yeah, that's it.
Right, so that's what happens. That is the difference, my friends, between tax planning and tax preparation. When you see your CPA in April, most of which you never see your CPA, you see your tax return signed, you don't sit down and have the conversation, they're in a rush, you're disappointed and dismayed over the amount of money that you have to pay the IRS in the first place, right? Nobody has this conversation, and it's the year's already over, right? And so it's in the bag. Tax planning is one of those things that has to be done by the end of the year, and in my opinion, charitable planning is one of those that has to be done in the beginning. So, Ken, you did such a good job on stock buybacks. Was there anything that surprised you about that?
Just the amount of stock that's being bought back every year. I know you hear all the time that corporations buy back X amount of stock, but for the total for the year, kind of astounded me.
The interesting part is they never sell. You never hear the stories about selling it back, right?
Right.
But that's where the money comes from in the options. Remember, anytime you go public, regardless of what your size is, it's usually done for one of two reasons. It's either done because you think the market is way overvalued and you can get more money for it than what it's worth. It's why you see so many of them go public at one time. Or you've got founder risk. I mean, think about the amount of money that that Zuckerberg has in Facebook stock,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you need capital, as a general rule, you always want to go to the debt markets. You want to borrow it, right? I don't sell stock in the Financial Enhancement Group to anybody who doesn't work here. It's just part of the deal. I would never relinquish equity in something that I love and work hard for. That doesn't mean that I don't borrow money for buildings and the other things that we have to be able to operate, right? It's, you know, that's part of the business interest. Tell me about a retirement budget, Angie.
That is, once you retire, your income's going to change. You're going to probably convert over to a fixed income. And you want to still maintain your standard of living, so you need to compare what you were bringing in to what your new income is going to be and see if you're still able to live within your means.
And when do we try to help people get that set up?
Before they retire.
Before they retire. How long before they retire?
Well, in the preservation phase, did you say 5 years before you retire?
Retirement practice year. You're trying to bring in other show stuff, which is good. You're learning.
Yes.
I like
yes.
it. You know, if something happens to me, Angie's going to do the show. Right? You know, we got this all worked out and set up. So if I'm on vacation and it's the Angie and Ken show, you know, you'll know what happened.
Okay.
I think Angie just got excited and Ken said, I don't think so. Anyhow, with the retirement budget, the reason you have to have it is so that you have a division of what is fixed expenses that you have to take out and what is social expenses. Because what we can, and I can easily demonstrate it in charts that are averages, that are done academically, but more importantly, I see it happen in our practice. And that's that when people reach 68, the distributions that they take for fun stuff begins to go down. You either can't get away from the grandkids, can't get away from a doctor, or you simply like the comfy couch. I mean, it's just comfy. I go in my backyard and I watch the birds and I'm not anywhere near 68 yet. I get it, right? Barb texted me a picture of a new bird on the bird feeder today. You know, it's just one of those things. So the retirement practice year is where we try to do this a year before you actually go to retire. Now, don't get confused. We have a lot of people who come to us 2 years before they retire. We have a lot of people who come and it's 2 years after and they go, hey, this didn't work out the way that I thought it was going to work. This getting the money stuff out is not as easy as I thought. Or you just get tired of doing it. You know, we had a gentleman, it was earlier this year, I think, that had always done it on his own and it was a diehard doc that worked hard and had promised his wife when he retired that they were going to go and enjoy life. And she said, you're not leaving CNBC, you're not leaving the computer, and you're not fulfilling your promises. And there was a tear in his eye when he handed over the stuff. But he knew it was time. He knew it was right. This is not something to be idly looked at. It takes a good amount of time and energy. So that's the retirement practice year. Life in your 30s, Angie, what would you go back and tell yourself now that we've had that conversation? What's one financial thing?
It would probably be debt driven, different ways to finance things, especially with revolving debt or unsecured debt.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Ken?
You know, you always want to save more, spend less, like Angie said. Maybe, you know, do different things earlier, pay off the house earlier, and so forth.
So would you have not bought the house that you bought? In order to change, not having to make the payment for it later?
No, I probably, looking back on it, you know, I probably would have taken some bonus money and paid it off earlier instead of making that payment. All of a sudden, you know, when some close to you, when you retire, like, you know, do I save this money and invest it or do I pay off the house? And probably would have paid it off a little bit earlier than what I did.
Got it. That makes sense. Mine would be structuring the debt and remembering that things change. And I think I'm probably, when I say remembering that things change, I see things that people do today that they shouldn't be doing today because they made the decision to do them 15 and 20 years ago. And I am so close to the financial world, it's hard to give me financial advice. So I definitely would have structured debt. I would have stayed away from a few shiny things. I think I would have bought the house that we moved to sooner because you get more use out of it. You know, instead of not, then if I really had to think about it and to do it over again. But just understanding for your own money out there, folks, things change and be very, very alert to that. Just because you made an investment type of investment decision or a type of tax decision 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I can't express to you how much my industry has changed. I feel like I've been in one industry for 31 years and I'm in my seventh career. You're listening to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, Ken Dilger, and Angie Kinzer. Hey, thanks for joining us. Have a great week.